Good morning, everyone. Today is the Ganesha Homa in Mauritius, first Sunday of the month. We got in a report already because they're time difference. Ganesha Homa started at 9:30. Final arati was at 11. Clear blue sky. Some 4,000 devotees of Lord Ganesha attended the Ganesha Homa today. Not bad. Imagine hosting 4,000 people. Oh, how did they do it? Thousands of the nicest roses and other flowers, garlands, considerable sweets and fruits were offered to Lord Panchamukha Ganapati by the public. Talk was from chapter 27 of Living with Shiva on positive discipline. Public was invited to get a copy of the booklet on positive discipline. The merits and excellence of Hinduism today were explained. Mini Mela sold more than 600 booklets of the French version of Parenting with Love. 600 copies in one morning. It's pretty good. All of the issues of Hinduism today were sold out. Mini Mela has an urgent need for more Hinduism today. Plenty of traffic policemen were present, which allowed a smooth flow of vehicles. So that's a nice aspect of Mauritius, is the police will come for the Hindu event and control traffic. They won't do that here. We have to hire a security person. Anyway, that sounded very positive. When the weather isn't rainy, it helps get more people, because there's not a covered space for everybody. So as I mentioned last phase in Mauritius, the message I was stressing was the use of calm, intelligent communication as the essence of positive discipline approach to raising children, and that this also applies to parents handling their disagreements as well. And Manon, who gives the talk, asked for some material on adults, because we have the children is all in the what we reprinted, but what do we have regarding adults? So I was looking on the, searching on the web, and found a 1991 publisher's desk from Gurudeva, which relates to parents handling disagreements, so I thought I'd read that. Abuse in the home is a difficult issue, but one we must confront openly. Our page one article and other features begin to define the problem. I urge you all to stand up and say it is no longer acceptable for a man to abuse his wife or children. It must stop. In order to heal the differences that arise within a marriage from time to time, both partners have to give in. The best place to do this is at the feet of the gods in their shrine room. There is often no other solution. This is the only way. The method of giving in is to talk it over. Major emphasis is to see the other's point of view, finding points in the disturbance they can agree with. Agreement is the key word. The relationship between the husband and wife, who are also a mother and a father, or potential mother and father, has lasting influence. Some relationships are easy and some are hard, but here is a good practice for resolving disagreements. You all know what it is. Heal your differences before sleep, even if it takes all night. Don't go to sleep holding on to anger, fear, confusion, or ill feelings. By doing this repeatedly, a new habit will be created. The inconvenience of this wisdom, isn't that a beautiful phrase? The inconvenience, meaning you have to stay up all night. The inconvenience of this wisdom will cause each one to be careful of his or her words, thoughts, and actions. Because the instinctive mind likes to sleep, so it works. Professional people do not argue long before reconciliation in large corporations, nor do they undermine each other, lest they be looking for another place of employment. Divorce in this modern time is like being dismissed, fired, and then the search is on for another partner with whom the same unresolved karmas will finally mature. To build solid marriages, some Hindu institutions provide a weekly family home evening for fellowship and discussion. For young couples just starting a marriage, it can be helpful to write down mutual ideals and expectations in a three-part marriage contract written by the couple themselves before the wedding. Part 1 defines the overall purpose of the marriage and the aspirations and goals that the union intends to fulfill. Parts 2 and 3 are a statement of duties and responsibilities by each of the partners. This semi-corporate approach has proven successful in stabilizing many marriages, as each one clearly understands his or her role. Like a ship's chart, this more detailed vow can be referred to if the relationship gets off course. Marriage reconciliation occurs annually in December, during the holy time of Pancha Ganapati. The couple takes out their marriage agreement and together they study where they have been lax or derelict. They trace back in their minds to incidents that are still vibrating as negative samskaras and apologize humbly and seek forgiveness and resolution. They renew their commitment to each other. This is a wonderful key for setting the tone for the coming year of harmony and peace, which leads to abundance and happiness. We call this Anahata Yoga, cleansing the heart chakra, bringing up that true love for one another. It is the process of bringing up all those things that were not settled before going to sleep, to retrieve those seeds before they get plowed under again and produce another crop of sorrow in the coming years. In other words, we only remember something for so long, and then we forget it. So if we clear everything up every year, then we haven't forgotten something before we cleared it up. But if we wait 2, 3, 4 years, we may have forgotten it. So we're putting something in the subconscious without realizing it. Bring up little things that each one said or did that hurt the other and were not resolved. Bring up anger that occurred, any physical violence which should never be, it may have been. Make promises and New Year resolutions to set the course of the future on the path of Dharma, which is based on ahimsa. Nothing out of date in that, is there? 18 years old, but still applies. Gurudeva, on many occasions, gave this advice to newly married couples. They would come and ask, you know, what Gurudeva would you suggest? And he'd always go through this point, and I do the same thing, and it works out something like this. You have a young couple there, you know, big-eyed, recently married, full of hope and expectation, and naive as to, you know, what the reality of what marriage is. And they ask this, Swami, do you have any advice for us? There it is, that's the question. And it happens regularly, same words. And so I always give Gurudeva's response, and it goes something like this. It's natural for a husband and wife to disagree. It's not realistic to say we should never disagree. You know, just being a man and being a woman, we have two different ways of looking at things, and there's bound to be disagreement. But what we can do is resolve the disagreement. That's where we have choice. And Gurudeva's wisdom is to always resolve disagreements before going to sleep. And after I say that, we give them the shawl and take the photo. Dozens of taka photos with that scenario. So I was mentioning this in Mauritius at one of the satsangs, and it was at Siva Kumaran and Kavita's house. So they started smiling when I said that, and chatting back and forth a little bit because they were in the back of the room. And afterwards they explained to me that the shawl I was sitting on at that moment was the one that Gurudeva had given them 18 years ago and said those very words. So it was really sweet. And it shows the continuity here. So I have another suggestion as to handling disagreements that I found in the Master Course. It's to do with actinic and odic force. When we are in actinic force and we are aware of it, we have harmony. We have peace in all our external life. Everything goes right, and everyone sees eye to eye and finds points of agreement one with another. There's no argument and there's no confusion. However, when we become conscious in and awareness is flowing through the odic force realms, awareness actually thinks it is odic force. Then we have inharmonious conditions to live in. No one sees eye to eye one with another. There's argument and there is contention. Actinic, for anyone who doesn't recall, means the pure spiritual energies or superconscious energies. Odic is the conscious and subconscious energies. So we can get into actinic energy through religious practice, such as attending or performing puja or performing meditation, can put us into our actinic energy. So likewise, if we are sensing we're out of harmony with someone and there's a problem, one way to adjust it is simply to adjust where our awareness is flowing. It's another way of doing it. We just get our awareness out of being externalized, get it internalized through religious practice, and then we can find a point of agreement. So the publisher's desk was on advice for married couples. Gurudeva also gives advice for monastics. There's a short statement in the vows, in the vow of obedience. It says, the monastic must always seek agreement and a merging of minds with his fellow monastics, never supporting or sustaining contention or disagreement, or stubbornly clinging to an opposite point of view. And there's a longer version for monks. In merging with Shiva, it says, having stepped out of his ego shell, the sannyasin is a free soul. Nothing binds him, nothing claims him, nothing involves him. Without exclusive territory, without limiting relationships, he is free to be himself totally. If he has problems within himself, he keeps them silently within and works them out there. If he speaks, it is only to say what is true, kind, helpful, or necessary. He never argues, debates, complains. His words and his life always affirm, never negate. And leading up to the next point here. He finds points of agreement, forsaking contention and difference. No man is his enemy, no man is his friend. All men are his teachers. Some teach him what to do, others teach him what not to do. He has no one to rely upon except God, God's guru, and the power within his own spine. He is strong, yet gentle. He is aloof, yet present. He is enlightened, yet ordinary. He teaches the basic philosophy of monistic theism, or non-dual reality. He speaks wisely of the Vedic scriptures and ancient shastras, and lives them in his own example. Yet he consciously remains inconspicuous, transparent. That's a good one. One last thought. Have you noticed on Taka the quote changes every time you access it? So you can access it now and then come back in 2 minutes and it's a different quote. Have you ever wondered, is that quote just for me? Am I the only one who got that quote? But it's random where it goes and gets it. So this is the one I ran into yesterday, which relates to everything we're talking about. Harmony is the first and foremost rule of living in all spheres, but particularly in spiritual work, where it is an absolute must. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our guests this morning. Nice to have you with us. The current week's teachings in Merging with Shiva are about awareness and consciousness, and it's one of Sridevi's key concepts for understanding meditation, understanding the mind, understanding how to control the various experiences we have in our emotions and our thinking mind. The key concept that I marked here reads this way. Consciousness and awareness are the same when awareness is totally identified with and attached to that which it is aware of. To separate the two is the artful practice of yoga. Naturally, the Shumchef language is needed to accomplish this. When awareness is detached from that which it is aware of, it flows freely in consciousness. Sometimes I compare these teachings to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and we might someday organize them more on that form, because when you pull them out just one line at a time in the style of the sutras, you can reflect on them naturally. And those of you who remember Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, this I thought would be a great sutra to begin Gurudeva's Yoga Sutras with. Consciousness and awareness are the same when awareness is totally identified with and attached to that which it is aware of. Patanjali starts out, yoga is restraining the mind stuff from taking various forms. That's his approach. So the idea, for those who aren't familiar with it, is to think of consciousness, the various states of mind, happiness, sadness, joy, sorrow, as something we travel through. Gurudeva uses the analogy to a city of San Francisco, because we used to have a center there, is what he used in the writings. If we're traveling through a city, we go through the various districts. Some districts are wealthy, some are poor. Some are business districts, some are shopping districts. We're just traveling around going through these various districts. The districts are always there, right? Even if we're not experiencing them, they don't go away just because we're not there. So likewise, the various states of mind, joy and sorrow, are always there. And we can travel through them once we figure out how to do that. And that's the idea of meditation through the Shumchef language. The basic concept, once we give thought to consciousness and awareness as two different things, is that we can control the states of consciousness we experience, which is an important idea. In other words, quite often the state of consciousness we're in is simply a reaction to something that happened outside of us. Somebody was nasty to us, so we're upset. Somebody was nice to us, so we're happy. Obviously, the states of mind we're experiencing aren't under our control. They're under the control of the people around us. They're determining what we experience. So the idea is, we don't have to let ourselves go through that. We can command our awareness to experience different states of consciousness, no matter how people are treating us. There's a related thought, which also would be a great sutra number two. Energy, awareness, and willpower are one and the same. In other words, we were talking about awareness. Awareness can also be called energy. It can also be called willpower. It has these different qualities in English that comes out in different words. But it's actually a one thing being described in different ways. Awareness and energy being one thing, for example, if we're doing something we don't like, we've been doing it for a while, we probably get tired. We start to feel tired. But if we're doing something we really like, we never feel tired. We just keep going forever. We keep bringing in energy. In other words, because we're interested in it, because our awareness is focused intensely upon it, we have lots of energy. So when we have awareness, lots of awareness, we have lots of energy. It's easy to accomplish, meaning we have lots of willpower. So if ever you find something boring, try and figure out how you actually enjoy doing it. You'll probably find some new energy in it. Willpower is an important point that relates to willness, awareness. So I mark that as the third one. How do we cultivate the willpower? What do we mean by will? Will means that if you're going to complete something, you complete it. Finish that which you begin. Finish it well, beyond your expectations, no matter how long it takes. If you're going to do something, do it well, no matter if it is a simple task or a complicated one. If you're going to read a book and intend to finish the book, then read the book, finish the book, and understand what it had to offer you, for that was the purpose for reading it. So what Gurudeva is saying is willpower, or the ability to accomplish things, is strengthened in two ways, by finishing what we start and by doing it well. In some places, he says, even better than you plan to. So we challenge ourselves when we do things. We don't let ourselves start something and not finish it, and we don't let ourselves do something not to the best of our ability, of course, according to the time we have. We can never do something outside of the time frame that we have to do it in, but we do the best job we can and a little better within the time frame given, and we finish it. And in that way, we strengthen our willpower. Gurudeva compares willpower, or the ability to accomplish things, to a muscle. If you want to strengthen a muscle, what do? You use it, right? You exercise it. The more you use a muscle, the stronger it is. It gets stronger through use. It's not compared to a resource. The water, the more you use water, the less there is. But it's not that way with willpower. The more you use it, the more you have. Just as the more you use a muscle, the stronger it is. And the relevant point is that the willpower that we acquire in accomplishing our outer tasks is there to do inner tasks. For example, when we sit down and we want to meditate, the same amount of willpower that we've developed to handle our outer tasks is there to handle our inner tasks, and concentrating the mind takes a lot of willpower. Sitting still takes a lot of willpower. So in doing outer tasks and constantly challenging ourselves and increasing our willpower, therefore it increases our ability to go within in meditation. The two are related. They're not unrelated. It's the same quality. Likewise, the same concentration we develop and improve through our outer tasks by paying attention to what we're doing is available when we sit down to meditate. So when we increase it in outer tasks, we also increase our ability to concentrate better in meditation, which of course can be a challenge unless we study it out and figure out how to do that. So thank you very much for listening. Good morning, everyone. Looking this morning at our June Mamsani. For those who don't know, a Mamsani is a simple form of a meditation in the Shum language. We have 12 of them, one for each month. Shum words are Nifmasi, Nimf, Liunasi. So fortunately, Gurudeva explains them. Those who don't know them. Nifmasi, Liunasi is the sixth Mamsani of the year. Nifmasi is a portrait of the sixth dimension, and the meaning has to be experienced to be known. It means that the inner body of the soul is alive and conscious in the physical body, and to some degree is taking over the elements of the physical body, because you have put the physical body into a certain position. Nifmasi also names this position, the six-dimensional position of the body, where you can feel the power of the soul, the body of the superconscious that we study about so intently in Master Course. The Nifmasi position is sitting with your right foot on your left thigh. You put that leg up first, and then you put your left foot on the right thigh. Your hands are placed in your lap. the right hand resting on the left, palms up, tips of the thumbs touching softly. The spine is, of course, straight, and the head is balanced at the top of the spine. Sometimes in the practice of Nifmasi, great pain is experienced in the joints, muscles, and ligaments. It is recommended within the realms of wisdom to experience some of this pain because the inner elements are adjusting the outer elements of the body, and you are working out deep subconscious areas that may have been accumulating within you for many, many lives. This is a very important position and should be worked at until you can sit comfortably in Nifmasi and feel the power of the soul for a half an hour or an hour or more without moving. So work diligently with this posture while meditating upon this Mamsani. Sitting in Nifmasi makes it easy to come into the next area, which is named by the fourth dimensional portrait, Liyunasi. Liyunasi refers to feeling the nerve currents of the body. There are thousands of miles of nerve currents in each of us. Don't try to feel them all at once. Start with the little ones, with the feelings of the hands, thumbs touching. Now feel the life force going through these nerves, energizing the body. Try to sense the even more subtle nerves that extend out around the body about 3 or 4 feet. This may take a long time. When you have located some of these nerves, feel the energy within them. Tune into the currents of life force as they flow through these nerves. This is a subtle feeling, and most likely awareness will wander into some other area of the mind. When this happens, gently bring it back to your point of concentration, to feeling the nerves within the body and the energy within the nerves. This Mamsani then tells us that if we sit in Nifmasi, we bring the power of the soul into prominence in the physical body and allow awareness to flow quite naturally into the Liyunasi area. The flowing line between Nifmasi and Liyunasi means awareness traveling from one area of the mind to another, and its name is Nimph. So that's Gurudeva's explanation. So he has two key ideas. The first is the importance of the posture chosen for meditation. So Gurudeva, of course, favors the lotus posture, Padmasana, the Sanskrit word, lotus posture, the English word, as the ideal posture for meditation. Another option he mentions elsewhere is the half lotus posture, and part of the idea he presents is to not move during meditation. So, of course, we're breathing, right? So some movement is needed, but that's a very small movement, so it means no significant movement should be done during meditation, as every time we have a significant movement, we're starting over to one degree or another from the beginning of the meditation. So when it comes to feeling the life force, that's the second idea. And if you noticed, you may not have noticed it if it's the first time you heard that, Gurudeva gives a very specific 4-step progressive process, moving from grosser to more subtle forms of Liyunasi. This is typical in the way Gurudeva explains a meditation. It's very step by step by step, going from something that's grosser to something more subtle, to something more subtle, to something more subtle, in a very methodical way. That's the way he's written up these Shum meditations. So what's the first step? Locate the nerves within the hands. So those are the physical nerves. So we want to feel the nerves within our hands. We don't want to think about them. We want to feel them. The whole idea of Shum is to feel or experience something, not to think about it. So we're trying to feel the nerves in the hands. After we've done that, the second stage is to feel the life force going through these nerves, energizing the body. So there's energy going through the nerves. So we try and feel the energy, which is more subtle than the nerves. Third, we try to sense the even more subtle nerves that extend out and around the body about 3 or 4 feet. So, of course, these aren't physical. No physical nerves out there. These are subtle. They do exist, flowing out from the body, and then we try and feel the energy flowing through them once we've found them. So it's a four-step process. The physical nerve, the energy flowing through the physical nerve, the subtle nerves going out from the body, and the energy flowing through them. So Gurudeva describes this in his definition. He says, strive to locate the basic instinctive energy flow within your body, meaning physical body, and subtle bodies, meaning not physical, in the portrait Liyunasi. So as I mentioned, Shum is systematic in experiencing something gross and then something more subtle, more subtle. So the whole idea of Liyunasi, experiencing the energy in the nervous system, physical and subtle, is it prepares us to experience the more subtle energy, the spiritual energies in the spine, which are called Simshumbisi. And that's in the preparation for meditation. That's where we go from Liyunasi and then into Simshumbisi. So we're going from something that's a little grosser to something more subtle. One has prepared us for the other. So there's a Sanskrit term that's useful. It's nadi, N-A-D-I. And it refers to all this non-physical part that we're talking about, both Liyunasi and Simshumbisi. The non-physical nerves experienced in Liyunasi and Simshumbisi are all called nadis in Sanskrit. Looking up on the web to see what I could find, and I almost printed it out for everyone. It was such a great picture. And Google Images, if you look up nadis, you have a beautiful picture of a yogi sitting there with all these nadis within and outside of him. Gives a good idea of how many there are. Thousands of them. So our lexicon defines nadi. It's, the literal meaning is conduit or river. And the definition is a nerve fiber or energy channel of the subtle inner bodies of man. So it's what energy flows through. It is said there are 72,000 nadis. These interconnect the chakras. The three main nadis are Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. These three main ones, along with 11 other prominent nadis, comprise the 14 nadis of Simshumbisi. Gurudeva describes Simshumbisi as the area of 14 strong psychic nerve currents of the subsuperconscious state of mind running along the spinal column. So the whole network is called nadis, but there's three that are the main ones. They're not dealt with in this meditation, but in others coming up. Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna are the Sanskrit names. So those are the three main ones. And they, along with 11 others, 14 in total, run through the spine and comprise Simshumbisi, 14 nerve currents. There's another perspective Gurudeva gives that's helpful in understanding nadis. It's in merging with Shiva as part of the concept of the seven aspects of man. He states, man, as the mystics understand him, is the immortal soul surrounded by seven aspects. Here follows a summary of the seven aspects of man established around the actinic causal body of the soul, Anandamaya Kosha, sheath of bliss. So the idea is we're the soul, the Anandamaya Kosha, and then around that there are seven progressively grosser aspects of ourselves. So we're not going through all seven, just the ones to get past the nadis. So the seventh, the most subtle aspect, is the intuitive mind, actinodic causal sheath, Vijnanamaya Kosha, or sheaths of cognition. That's the seventh. The sixth is what we're talking about, is the subtle nerve system, nadis and chakras. The fifth is the intellect, odic causal sheath. So you can see the nadis and the chakras are pretty subtle, is the point, that they're up in that realm between ectonodic causal sheath and the odic causal sheath. It's another description which is helpful of the nadis, relating them to the aura. So the aura is an area both within and surrounding us that's filled with lots of colors. And the one that's outside of us reflects our current state of mind. One inside of us reflects conditions from the past. So both of those are permeated with the nadis. Gurudeva says, within the aura are psychic nerve currents called nadis. It is through these nadis that you feel someone standing next to you without turning your head to look at him. Also, by standing next to a person 2 or 3 feet away, you can feel how he is feeling. Feelings are transferable, for feelings are vibrations which can be felt through the subtle nerve system. You feel them with these astral nadis that extend out from the body into and through the aura. Oftentimes you may identify with the feelings that you pick up from others and begin to feel that way yourself. Well, actually, you are just picking up the vibration from someone near you. As we have learned, through the clairvoyant vision, these feelings can be seen as colors in the astral atmosphere surrounding your acquaintance. So that's something we have to be careful of. We can take on the emotions of others easily, particularly if we know them, and think there are emotions, and that's kind of confusing. Why am I feeling like that? Well, you're not. It's your friend that's feeling like that. Another description, the nadis. This is a very useful one. These powers are conceived through the nadis, small, elastic-like, psychic nerve currents extending out into and through the aura of the body. The nadis work in conjunction with the chakras and with their major currents of the body, Ida Pingala and Sushumna. Last one is the most subtle one. So the most subtle form of nadis is of the 7 chakras that lie above and within the crown chakra at the top of the head. So these are so subtle we usually don't talk about them. We usually just talk about the main chakras from the head chakra down to the memory chakra. But these are above, and it helps us understand the full concept of the nadis. These higher chakras have been experienced by a rare few as a conglomerate of nadis, spiritual nerve currents, which when stimulated and developed by many samadhi experiences, slowly descend into the mental and astral bodies, affecting a permanent transformation of the entire being. Well, that's our June meditation. Thank you very much.
Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Faith, Willpower, Focusing Awareness, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhiyada Velayada Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.